Blog Talk Radio.
Benjamin Brothers Realty presents The Michael Van Tol Show, an inspirational community affairs program produced by Michigan Ocean Strategy Group, LLC. Experts in providing support services for new businesses. Call 248-516-8300. Benjamin Brothers Realty can help you buy, sell, or learn how to do real estate investing. Call them at 331-248-7120 to find them, fix them, and flip them. And now, author, recording artist, community worker, and Cass Tech graduate, Michael Van Tol.
Good morning. Thank you for waking up and listening to the Michael Van Tol Show, Detroit Sunday morning news and information and inspirational podcast brought to you by Michigan Ocean Strategy Group and sponsored by Benjamin Brothers Realty and the warrior lawyer, Johnny Hawkins. My name is Michael Van Tol. Thank you so much for joining us on the program today. Of course, you know, we've got news, weather, commentary, and of course the Sunday morning team as they chime on board. Let me just say one thing right off the bat. I just want to thank all of those who contributed to my Leukemia and Lymphoma Society Visionaries campaign to raise funds for LLS. You know, I'm not new to nonprofits. My parents are retired Salvation Army majors, and you know, I learned a lot of good lessons from them over the years. And one of those things is that's important to volunteer and help others, about caring for others. And so that's why I volunteer to work with organizations like the Salvation Army, the James Tatum Foundation for the Arts, Franklin Wright Settlements, and of course, now Leukemia and Lymphoma Society. And I want to thank my team. I had about 15 members of the team that helped me in this process, that gave me encouragement, and that really helped me to move forward. And it was about six of us on this campaign. And the winner, Chris Keller, congratulations to Chris Keller. The winner, he, along with the other five of us in the campaign, we collectively raised over $108,000 over the past 10 weeks for the Leukemia and Lymphoma Society of Michigan. Thank you so much, all of you, those who, my team, and those who supported me, attended, and then of course we had our grand finale at the Andiamo and Warren on this past Thursday. So thank you so much. All right, we're going to take a station break. When we come back, we've got news, weather, and even more after these messages.
We find them and fix them and flip them. We find them and fix them and flip them. Got them dripping with style, got them like wow. Now everyone wants to know how. If you want to do it yourself, you can generate generational wealth. It's so comprehensive and it's not expensive, essential for financial health. You'll appreciate how we articulate when we communicate, and we educate, and we motivate, and we innovate. It's
Benjamin Brothers Real Estate. Benjamin Brothers Real Estate.
If you want to buy, sell, or learn how to do real estate investing, please call 331-248-7120 or email us at bbrosrealty@gmail.com. That's bbrosrealty@gmail.com.
Have you or a loved one been seriously injured in a motor vehicle related accident? Then make your first call count.
called Johnny Hawkins, the Warrior Lawyer. With Johnny Hawkins, a nationally recognized super lawyer, he cares, and his primary focus is on providing exceptional service to each client, and not just winning big. For your free telephone consultation with Johnny Hawkins, the Warrior Lawyer, simply call 248-567-9990. Again, that's 248-567-9990. Support Black excellence by allowing Black excellence to support you through service.
And now, back to the Michael Van Tool Show, sponsored by Benjamin Brothers Real Estate. Call 331-248-7120.
All right, we are back. My name is Michael Van Tool. The Sunday Morning Team is chiming in. International Police and Fire Chaplains Association and musician and preacher. Good morning, Chaplain Stephen Caffey.
Good morning to you, Mike. Good morning to our amazing Sunday morning team. Shout out to the missionary this morning, as I know she's listening. And, hey, I want to say good morning to Detroit.
And I know for a fact that she is listening and engaged. She may even call in shortly on our hotline. Thank you, Chaplain. And we've been, I got to talk to you. I'll reach you today. I think you're number one on my return call list as my vacation ends today.
Okay.
All right, here we go. A lady that is just hot off the plane, just landed at Metro, our lifestyle editor, author, speaker, podcaster, Kimberly Batchelor Davis. Good morning, Kimberly.
Good morning, Michael. Good morning to our amazing Sunday morning team. Shout out to missionary Hattie Humphrey, and good morning, Detroit.
Great.
Oh, yeah.
We are looking forward to hearing from you, and tell us a little bit about your trip. So we're going to be listening for that. So please update us this morning. All right.
I will.
A political analyst, home care advocate, Henrietta Ivey. Good morning, Henrietta.
Good morning, Michael. Good morning to the amazing missionary, Hattie Humphrey. And good morning to our amazing Sunday morning team and everybody that's listening in Detroit.
Great, great. I am so glad. What a beautiful morning it is. They say a few storms, and I know Kimberly's going to update us on that in a few minutes, too. But we've got news and weather and commentary. I'd love to hear from the Sunday morning team, too. And I tell you, I am going to try to see if we can get Missionary Humphrey on this morning. It's been a while. I spoke to her a couple times this week. And so I know she's listening, and if she can get a chance, I know she will call. We're looking forward to that. All right. All right, I think I need my coffee this morning.
I understand. Oh. I am still jet lagged.
Yes. I've had a ever since the LLS banquet last Thursday, it's just been nonstop, of course. You know, taking of course, Father's Day, taking a little break from work and everything, and just getting back now. I think I've got one more event coming up this afternoon. All right. Well, in the news this morning, support is starting to waver in Russia as Vladimir Putin wrestles with his first political and military threat to his regime. Of course, this is not a surprise for any of us because the Russian president is also facing war crimes due to the vicious nature of killings of innocent civilians in his war against Ukraine. The war in Ukraine has exposed Russia's military weakness as it stalls and fails in its effort to destroy and overtake Ukraine. You know, Ukraine, which posed no threat to Russia, was invaded by Russia, and now over 9,000 Ukrainians have been killed, 15,000 wounded in Russia's war against Ukraine. The war has exposed Russia's weak army now and lack of weapons, and it has now exposed Putin's political weakness. Russia's private military force and its leader began a military challenge in the past, 36 hours, that they overtook two army bases and announced that they were headed next to Moscow. And Putin went on radio and TV to warn and threaten the Wagner Group, that's what it's called, against coming any closer to Russia, to Moscow. It has been a very tense and unusual 48, 36 hours as these two powerful leaders square off against each other. This was, I think, the first time that we saw how weak Russia is in every way. And if this guy, Yevgeny Prigozhin, if he decided to move into Russia, I don't think there was much that Putin could have done. But somehow within the past 24 hours, there was an agreement. They made a deal for the Wagner Group led by Prigozhin to back down, to stand down, turn the forces away from Moscow, and he has agreed, Prigozhin, he's agreed to move to the country of Belarus, which is bordering on Ukraine and Russia. So something happened, but all I can say, this is a very volatile situation, and anything can happen at any moment. Russia, Putin's Russia, is under threat right now, but it's not a surprise because we saw how weak their army was against Ukraine. They haven't been able to do much to take over Ukraine like they wanted to, and there is also a lack of weapons and ammunition on Russia's behalf. Ex-Detroit City Councilman Andrei Spivey, who began serving a two-year sentence for bribery last July in West Virginia, is under home detention now. He's been released in Detroit, his attorney told Deadline Detroit on Thursday. So it's common for inmates to transition from prison to halfway house or home confinement before, you know, if they're in state or federal prison. During that time, while under restrictions, they're often allowed to work in transit. Attorney Elliot Hall says Spivey was released from prison on June 1st and will be under some home detention until October. And after that, he'll be on supervised release for 1 year. As you can recall, Spivey accepted $35,000 from an undercover FBI agent and a government confidential source between February 2018 and 2020 while sitting on the council. He cooperated with the FBI and then he was sentenced to 2 years in prison. So he is back and out of there. The movie Pixar's movie Elemental is a complete and total failure. Elemental was produced by Pixar, which is a division of Disney and founded by Steve Jobs. These billionaires always it's the same few billionaires that run everything. The movie was a complete flop, and they're trying to figure out now how they can come back. The DSO and Black Panther Marvel Studios teamed up this past weekend to present the movie Black Panther Wakanda Forever at the DSO. What they did was they played the movie, which was released in 2020. They played the movie on the big screen, and the DSO played the background music for the movie. I was there. It was great. It was a great combination to have the live music by the DSO as the movie was playing on the screen. Many times you forgot that the music was live. It sounded that good. And it was amazing to see people in the audience laughing and hear, you know, at this movie was out in 2022 and people were laughing and commenting and talking as if it was just released yesterday. But the DSO was excellent in its live reproduction of the music in the movie. It was a great idea. I think something like that needs to be done again on a regular basis. All right. Let's go straight to weather. Kimberly Batchelor-Davis.
So good morning, everyone. We have a current temperature of 77 degrees. Today, we should expect muggy weather with thunderstorms. Around a cold front will appear around 2 to 3 this afternoon with more showers. And then around 4 to 5, we should see even stronger storms. And so keep your eyes to the skies and watch out for storms capable of damaging wind, deadly lightning, and hail. So be careful out there today.
Is that this afternoon, this evening?
That is this afternoon. That is this afternoon, yes. So starting around 2, you should get more showers. They will start to increase in the wind speed and lightning and hail. It'll increase as it gets later in the day. So today, expect a high of 86, a low of 64 with PM showers and storms. Tomorrow, more rain with a high of 75 and a low of 61. On Tuesday, we'll have a few showers, but they will begin to fade with a high of 73 and a low of 59. On Wednesday, mostly cloudy with a high of 78 and a low of 59. On Thursday, partly cloudy with a high of 82 and a low of 63. And on Friday, partly cloudy with a high of 82 and a low of 63. And next Saturday, expect more scattered thunderstorms with a high of 80 and a low of 61. And that's the weather.
You still got some help on here. You still got a little help.
Great. Yes, we better be careful because, there's a lot of outdoor events. I'm going to be at an outdoor event this afternoon. And that's why I was concerned, too. So be very careful. You can just, sometimes when it gets so hot or sunny and then all of a sudden storms come in, that's when you got to be careful because it can just turn from a nice sunny day and that heat in the air, it's unstable. And here comes the thunder and lightning, people tend to go right under a tree or go near a pole, and you got to be careful.
Right.
That's where the lightning strikes, so you got to be really careful. I am so glad this morning we finally have the founder of the radio program. I've been on with Missionary since, oh, my God, it's been about 25 years. Good morning to Detroit Spiritual Ambassador Missionary Hattie Humphrey. How are you this morning?
Good morning,
Missionary. The Sunday morning team is here. I want to just go down the list and just have a hello to each member. First of all, let me just go down from the list. Chaplain Stephen Caffey. Chaplain Caffey, say something to Missionary Humphrey, please.
Good morning to you, Missionary. I normally call you every week to hear your voice on the phone. Brother Stephen, God bless you today. Good to hear you.
It's good to hear your voice. You're doing a great job. God is blessing you. I love
Thank you
all
so much.
I love you. It's a great day.
Okay, Kimberly Batchelor Davis.
Good morning, Missionary. It's so great to hear your voice this morning and to be back on air with you. Thank you. We love you so much.
And I love you, Kimberly. We've been together for so many years. God has been so good to us. And I'm saying to all of you, the best is yet to come. God bless you.
And Henrietta Ivy.
Good morning, Missionary. It is an absolute pleasure to hear your voice this morning. It has been a while, and you know we love you to pieces, and thank you for sitting in with us this morning.
And thank for you all being there. God has blessed you, and he's taking you all to a higher level, and I love you so much. It's good to hear your voice.
We don't forget you on every program. Somebody brings up your name. Somebody says something. I know sometimes you might either be sleeping in, you might be on your way to church or something like that, but let me just tell you, we do not forget you here on the Michael Van Tool Show. And then, and when I go out to places and speak, even to this day, I'll get up there and I'll say, my name is Michael Van Tool, co-host of Community Highlights with Missionary Humphrey. We will never, ever forget that you were the originator. You were here from the very beginning, and the reason why I'm on the radio is because of Missionary Hattie Humphrey. Thank you so much for getting up, and we feel so much better now that we talked to you.
Yes, absolutely.
We've missed you all these days.
And you all got you got me up early. I'm on my way getting ready to go to church. And I'd like for all of you all to continue to pray for me. I'm dealing pretty good with one eye now. Okay.
Okay.
Yeah, you said you were losing, you know.
And I'm enjoying your
blurry vision.
You all are my children. Carry on.
Great. Well, God bless you, missionary, and have a great day today. And as you know, we are always thinking of you, and we always have a seat here on this show for you anytime. God bless you.
Thank you. Thank you. You made my day. May the Lord bless all of y'all in the radio and the audience. God bless you.
God
if you take
you.
The Lord with you everywhere you go, all will be well. Okay?
Okay. Thank
all
you.
Right. Yes. Amen. Amen. Have a great day,
God
missionary. We love you.
That was Detroit Spiritual Ambassador Missionary Hattie Humphrey. And, you know, she's been on TV, you know, before radio, you know, most people it's the other way around. But before radio, missionary was on TV. Then she was on radio. So, you know, and then I was introduced to her way back, what was this, in 1998, 99, something like that. I was introduced to her, and we have worked together on the radio ever since. And been out to all these different churches and events and so many things that we have worked on together all these years. And I just used to love when we would walk into a church and the whole church came alive. It should have been alive at first before we went in there, but the whole church would come alive as we walked in. And of course, all these banquets that we've produced over the years, missionaries' birthday banquets, ended up being like one of the biggest banquets every spring. And from what I hear, the Barrister's Ball actually moved their banquet because of missionaries' influence and the fact that missionaries' banquets were on the third Saturday of each month. And sometimes the Barrister's Ball, you know, kind of collided with her birthday, and they ended up having to, you know, move it back a little bit. And that just shows you the influence of missionary. And then, of course, help build some of these congregations and have our friends with some of the biggest pastors, bishops in town, and helped to form some of the congregations, helped so many people to get elected. You know, I remember when I first got on the program with her, you know, it was all about the candidates, and she would take them out to the different churches, and many of the judges were elected because of missionary, and city council members, mayors. I mean, it took missionary support to help. And so she is a legend in this town, and I call her Detroit Spiritual Ambassador. All right, we're going to go down the list because I want to hear, I know some of you have had some events and things going on, and do you know, guys, that there was a certain point when three of us were out of town last Sunday, all three of us, Kimberly, me, Henrietta, and it was just like one of those things that just happened, you know, all at the same time, but somehow we did pull it off. Kimberly Batchelor Davis, can you just tell us a few things about how you spent the last, 10 days?
So I had the pleasure of traveling to Cuba. Let me tell you, Cuba is an amazing country. And I know that here in America, it's not a place that we can go. I am fortunate because I work for a law school, and we were, as a law school, were invited to a law conference. And because of that, I had an opportunity to spend 7 wonderful days in this country. Let me start off with food, because the food was absolutely incredible. Everybody on here love lobster?
Oh, yes.
Say that again.
Okay. Does everyone on the show love lobster?
Oh, yeah. Oh, definitely.
Okay. Lobster was $10. I mean, $10.
What? So we are. Did you bring some, boo?
It's illegal. You can't. So, go to a restaurant, and this is the best way that I can explain it. So when you go to a restaurant here, your favorite restaurant, say you go to Joe Muir's, McCormick and Schmick, someplace like that, and or Ocean Prime, and you order lobster, and it's market weight, you know your bill is going to be a minimum of $80, $90, and it's going to be a small tail. You know, the bigger the tail, the more money you're going to spend. We're talking tails that would not fit in the palm of my hand. That's how big they were. And they were $10. I had five star meals, several courses, including alcohol. It was $15. It is so inexpensive to eat there. The food is delicious. It's rich. It's fresh. No, you cannot drink the water. Everybody drinks bottled water, but the food was just delicious. The people are incredibly warm. No one is looking at you because you're American. They're not looking down at you. They're happy to see us. You're from America? Mm-hmm. Where are you from in America? You tell them you're from Detroit, Michigan, Motown, Motor City. They know what that is. They get very excited. They love American music. Their culture, the history of the island. You know, one of the things that I loved about Cuba, my host asked me on the last day that I was there, he said, Kim, what are some of your thoughts about Cuba? That I wish that we could get beyond politics and end the blockade, because there are so many things, there are so many ways that American travel and tourism could benefit Cuba. So I'm going to backtrack a little bit. I saw gas lines. Now, we've seen gas lines on television when people are running from hurricanes or running from tornadoes. This is different. You have to make an appointment. So you will drive past lines of cars. And I don't mean four or five. I'm talking about 30, 50 cars sitting in line with people. I'm not, because they've made an appointment, because if you miss your appointment, you have to make a new appointment, and apparently that's a difficult process. People get rations. People buy property. There's no homelessness in Cuba. Let me repeat that. There is no homelessness in Cuba. If there is homelessness, if someone decides they want to live on the street, it's because they decided that's what they want to do. The government will give you a place to live. There are lists that people get put on or apply to be put on to go to particular buildings, to particular areas. So my host lives in an apartment building, has a beautiful apartment, green windows, so we have screens in our windows. That's a luxury there. Forced air, so central air conditioning or any type of forced air, like overseas they call it a split. That is a luxury. Most people only have that if they have that at all. It is. If you guys have ever traveled to New Orleans, where it's hot and muggy, it's three times that in Cuba. You get up in the morning, you take a nice shower, you put your whatever you do in the morning, and then you put your mosquito spray on, because the mosquitoes are horrible there, and they will eat you alive. You have to wear mosquito repellent. As soon as you step outside, the heat just hits you. It's like it wraps you in a warm blanket, and literally you're outside walking for 5 minutes, and all of a sudden you're just pouring sweat because it's so hot. Everyone that I met there was well-educated. So my host, his wife, she's a teacher at the national school. She teaches diplomat kids. And I got an opportunity to see where diplomat row is, where all the embassies are. What was interesting to me to learn about Cuba that I did not know, Cuba was founded by not just the Spanish, but was founded by the mafia. So this was the mafia playground. So what we see in Las Vegas, that's what Cuba was supposed to be. And then in 1958, when the revolution happened, the mafia and everybody left. For those who are lovers of The Godfather, the movie, there's a scene where Michael is in Havana, and there's a shootout. It's the scene where he tells Fredo, "I know it was you." That scene is true. That is exactly what happened in Cuba. Because we were at a law conference, I was able to go to the university and see where the first shots were taken. They showed us the steps where that was actually taken, and we were actually able to walk around the university, which was fantastic.
And Kimberly, because of all the corruption, gangsters, casinos, hotel, live sex shows, because of all that, that's why the revolution occurred.
Part of it is. Part of it is. The other reason, the real reason why it really it happened is because Cuba had an apartheid system similar to South Africa. And Afro-Cubans were not allowed to own property. They were not allowed to go to school. So they didn't have the same rights. And it was the students who launched the rebellion. It was not Fidel Castro, the students. Fidel Castro was able to come back in because he had been ostracized.
Wasn't he jailed? He was put in jail, wasn't he?
He was put in jail, but they had let him out, and he was in another country. I forget what country he was in. He had gone someplace else and come back when the students started the revolution and was able to take over. And so the scene in The Godfather where you see people running for planes and boats, about a million people initially left. They took the wealth of Cuba with them. So when you go back to Cuba, people are very, very poor. They don't have anything. It's going to shock people, but they don't have toilet paper. When I say they don't have toilet paper, our tour guide told us, he said, bring a roll of toilet paper with you. He said, there's no toilet paper in any of the public restrooms. So if you have to go to the bathroom, there won't be any toilet paper. He wasn't lying. And I got off the plane in Havana and went to the bathroom because that's what you do. There was no toilet paper.
Mm-hmm.
Thankfully, I carry tissue, Kleenex with me wherever I go, so I had tissue, but there isn't any.
Mm-hmm.
This was the first hotel that I ever stayed in where there was no ATM left for me in my room with a pad of paper for me to write a letter at home. They have a blockade, so you have gas lines. You have paper shortages. They give out rations once a month of a variety of different things. I got an opportunity to go to a vegetable market. They have a black market there for food because, you know, people only get so much. Remember, this is still a communist nation that has socialist tendencies. We share everything. But it's not enough. So it's not like here where people are given food aid, but you still have the opportunity to go to the store. There are no Myers there. There are no Kroger's. There's no Rite Aid. There's no CVS. There's no McDonald's. There's no Kentucky. There's nothing there that's national that would tell you, oh, this is an import from America. They don't have that. You want a hamburger, you got to go to a restaurant and order it. Typically, most people eat fish and pasta and other things. I have the best fish there. It's just absolutely delicious. Historically, it is an interesting place. The mafia, this is a true story, the mafia and the white Cubans who initially left were the power boom. And when they left, that opened it up for everybody else. But because it is still very poor there, you don't see people. So the car thing is a real thing. I rode in a 56 Oldsmobile. It had been passed down from a man's grandfather to his father, to him. Everybody, it seems like they drive fixed. So he had readjusted his vehicle. So they just pull parts from wherever they can pull parts. So you don't see Mercedes. You don't see Land Rover trucks. You don't see Camrys.
Yeah, I was wondering, what do they drive?
They drive the old classic car. They drive the old classic cars because, remember, there's a blockade.
Like
so there's
in
no
time.
Importance. It is stuck in time, and that's what you see. Now,
wow.
Other people, what they do, they take parts from wherever they can get it and sort of make these little boxy cars. But they don't look like anything. The best way I could describe it, it looks like an old Volkswagen. You remember how they would have the old Saab, it would have like that sort of square boxy look? That's what it looks like. But it's not a Saab or a Volkswagen. It's just a pull different parts from different cars and just put it together.
Wow.
So it's industrious in how they do that. I went to a baseball field. I spent a day in a Havana neighborhood because I wanted to have an authentic Cuban experience. And my host allowed me to stay at his apartment for a day. He cooked for me and watched over me, so I had no problems. And it was amazing. And I got a chance to go to a baseball field where families gather to watch their kids play. Let me tell you, the reason why these Cuban players are outdoing us, because they come out of the womb ready to play. I saw baby kids on the field, 4 and 5, running like they were pros. I was like, oh. One of the guys brought over a baseball to me. We all know what a baseball is. This baseball was covered in tape on top of tape on top of tape on top of tape and even more tape. When I say industrial, that's what I mean. There's no setup for them to go and buy baseball. They have to rely on people bringing things in. So one of the things that was unique that I had never seen before, when I landed in Havana, I had to wait for my bags to come out. And I was really nervous because I was trying not to check my bag, but you know how you get on the airplane, you're like, we're all out. We got to check bags now. So I was one of those people. And I kept seeing luggage shrink wrapped in plastic. And so I thought, oh, that's strange. They must shrink wrap everybody. Then I finally saw my bag. So when I talked to my host, I said, yeah, I saw everybody's luggage was shrink wrapped. He said, Kim, they're bringing things in. He said, they bring in medicine. They bring in toiletries. They bring in sports items like baseball, football, different things that people will need because there's no way to get it on the island.
Mm-hmm. So they have to keep their luggage protected and secure. That's why?
Yes. Yes. So for women, they don't have tampons in Cuba. They don't. They use sanitary napkins because you got to be able to find things. So one of the things that I learned is that if someone, the word will go out and they'll say, oh, we have Tylenol, everybody will go and rush to get what they can. it's not something that's readily available. So where we take for granted, oh, I don't feel good today, let me run to the store and get some Tylenol or get some cold medicine. They don't have those opportunities. And so I went down. I always take Tylenol with me. I ended up taking a little bit of cold medicine because I was fighting something as I was going down. And ended up leaving it just so that it could be given. I talked to a cardiac nurse while I was there, and she's 26. What is interesting, their educational system, they don't have a four-year degree program. So everybody goes straight from what we consider high school into their professional program. So at the law conference, I'm sitting in front of people who have PhDs, and literally they look like they're 12. I mean, these people were young, but this is their specialty. And I was cracking up because I was like, you all look so young, but they're so educated. These are not dumb people. The problem is they get education, but not all education can quantify into a job, so to speak. But
right.
Many
it's
of
like,
them
what happens after doing, educated, right? What happens next?
Right.
After they get their education, their degrees and all that, what happens?
Mm-hmm. So some people leave and are able to immigrate to the United States through a variety of ways and are able to do things. Others stay there. So this particular cardiac nurse, who was 26 years old, young, dynamic, I was asking her, I said, okay, what is it like to be a nurse here? You know, do you enjoy your job? She said she did enjoy her job. She said, but sometimes her job is difficult because when things happen in Cuba, because of the way it's set up, it is difficult.
Mm-hmm.
Because say, for example, you have a heart attack. We know in America, if you have a heart attack, they're going to give you a boatload of tests, right? In Cuba, they might say, well, you need these 7 tests, but we only have 3 of the equipment we have. So you have to go with what they have and hope that's enough and that can save you. Because for a lot of people, it doesn't, because either they don't have the equipment that they need to treat them adequately and people die, or 2, they don't have the technology, the equipment, or whatever they need to make sure that they haven't missed something. So her stress, she said, some days it's difficult because you have people who have a very treatable condition and can't do anything about it. And sometimes something will happen, and you know that if you were anywhere else, that it could be treated, but there's nothing you can do about it because you're here in Cuba and they don't have the technology. So when I say poor, it's very poor. Sad state of affairs. You can be educated. You can do all those things, but you don't have it.
Well, Kimberly.
Beautiful, absolutely beautiful country. Yes.
Kimberly, because you said that, how did you feel every day waking up, getting ready to go out, and having to, I don't know, how did you feel about the challenges that you've had, the things that you could not have? Did it feel like you were back to basics? How did you feel every day? And tell me how you feel now that you're back and for what you had to go through on a temporary basis. I just want to see how it feels because, you know, here we have everything. And then there you have every day, every day you woke up, there was something, I'm sure. How do you put that, live with that, you know? I just want to get your feelings
And that's a great question. So for me, every morning I woke up with gratitude. That's what I came away with. I said, I have to be grateful. You know, here in America, we complain a lot. We stress a lot. We're always running, we run a rat race because we're always competing to be the next best. While I was there, I actually slowed down and took it all in, really thought about it, and enjoyed myself, and learned. At the law conference, one of the things that I love, they take coffee breaks. And so we had panel discussions, and so I was part of panel discussions with my dean and other staffers. And so it would be like, our university, their university. And they would announce, we're going to take a 15-minute coffee break. That's a serious thing. You take your cookie. Uh-huh. Coffee is so good. Let me tell you, it was delicious. But they give you a cookie, a biscuit, something. You have to have something with your coffee. You cannot just drink coffee. And so you're expected for 15 minutes to separate from work. Oh, we're not talking about this. How are you? How was your trip? What have you seen? Do you like it here? You know, it was about socializing, getting to know and connecting with people. And I appreciate that. That is something that we don't do here necessarily as well in America. My hotel was a 5-star hotel. They do have 5-star hotels there. So in terms of not having anything, Michael, I had everything. I had toilet paper. I had full spread breakfast, whatever I wanted. And I mean it, whatever I wanted, they had it. So for me, it wasn't so much not having things. It was going out and seeing how I was so blessed to have all the things that I had and meeting people and seeing that they didn't. But they didn't look at me as if, oh, I wish I was her or I don't like her because she has this or any of that. Mm-hmm. They just were joyful. And so I was joyful to spend time with them. And so I was very thankful every time I got an opportunity to go walk into someone's house because I got a chance to actually meet people where they were. Like I got a chance to go into real Cuban people's houses and talk to them. I will be honest with you, Michael. Every time I went somewhere, somebody was giving me something. And it was the funniest thing. And I was like, oh, my goodness. And it wasn't anything. There was a psychologist of it who was a friend of our host. And went to her house, and we were talking, and she made me this delicious glass of freshly squeezed pineapple juice. It was wonderful. And we were just talking about what it was like for mental health. Like, I was asking questions. Mental health in Cuba, what is that like? What is it like to be a woman psychologist? All those things. And she gave me a beautiful detail. Why? Because her family loves the ocean. And so I speak a little Spanish. And I told our host, I said, will you please let her know that I love the ocean. Seashells are one of my favorite things. It was something I was looking for, and I was so grateful to her. So she gave it to me, and we took a picture. The seashell is sitting on my shelf downstairs. Coming back or after experiencing that and talking, there was a young man I met on a beach, and we just started talking. And he shared that his father and his uncle had left Cuba to go to America to work, but that he didn't want to because his grandparents were there. They are very focused on taking care of their families. They don't have nursing homes. It's very different. Like, we are one-on-one. And I was amazed that he was okay to struggle in a place where he could very easily get out and leave and not look back. And for me, that blessed me to remind me how important it is for your family and your friends to have those people that you care about, that you love. When I came home, it felt like rush, 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 rush all over again.
Oh, this, I'm sure it must have felt like you're back.
Here we are back in the rat race.
And I just want to see if a couple of people had some questions. I got one more question because I've been to some of the Latin countries myself. How was the experience in the airport flying in, going through customs, and what was it like leaving? I'm interested in that because I have to deal with that on a regular basis myself. So how was it going through the process, the immigration, paperwork, customs? How was that experience at the airport?
So that is a different experience. I never experienced it. So this was my first time having to go through that. So when you go to Cuba, you have to not only have a passport, you also have to get a visa to come into the country. And so when you get off the plane, after having gone through everything in Miami, so I flew from Detroit to Miami, got to Miami, got my visa, sat down, waited for my plane to board, boarded the plane, got there. You get off, you come out of the gangway, and they're like, go this way. And then you got to go through one lady who I'm like, okay, I'm thinking this is the person that I'm supposed to show my passport to. She needed to see my visa and my boarding pass. And then she told me, go to this person. So it was like three levels of people that you go through. So then you go to the next person where they check your passport. And then they take your picture, stamp it, and then you have to go through what I would call their TSA. So whatever carry-on luggage that you have, you got to take all your stuff off again, put it in a little thing, and go through security. So they're double-checking you. Then you come out of there. If you have checked luggage, now you got to wait for that. Then you go to another lady who, because they've given you it's like a slip or something. Basically, I called it the Costco Sam's Club, where, okay, you got to sign my paper before I leave the airport. Literally, you stand in a line, they check over all your stuff and look at your passport and all that, and then they let you out. And then my driver that was assigned to me met us outside. So it was interesting. And then coming back, because my host had some great relationships, I was able to have a on-the-ground person from American Airlines, because we had that relationship, who was able to walk me through. And so they check you, come back in, you check your bag, they get all of that done, you check in, get your seat. Then you got to go back through immigration again. So then you pull out your passport, your visa. They go back through that whole process again. Then you go back and take your stuff off again and put that back through security so you can go actually into the airport terminal. You're not actually in the airport terminal. And so then when you go through that, then you're okay.
Wow.
It was easier leaving than it was coming in. Coming in was a little bit overwhelming.
What an adventure.
But it was a great experience. Yes.
What an adventure. I know it must have been exciting. Let me just see if Chaplain Kathy's got a question or comment since you're our special guest this morning, Kimberly. Chaplain, you got a question for our world traveler?
Yeah, because you've been that's our new position now, the road traveler express. She can tell you all about it.
Our roving reporter comes back with these fantastic.
Right. We got a road reporter on the go.
Yeah, now
she's on
first.
But
yeah.
I tell you this, though, I don't think I'll be going to Cuba. You hear me? Because I don't like hot. I don't like it all muggy. And no, all the stuff that you said, you know, I mean, the experience, the personal experiences was good. And you could bring something back from that. But I don't think Cuba would be a place that I would want to go, because he was so real about his geographic. They're so poor. They're, I'm like, wow. You know, and, you know, so it's a touching thing. I don't think I would be wanting to go there. And then all that you got to go through to get in there. You know, and, oh, man, it seemed like a hassle, but I thank God you made it back. So I guess that question would be to our world traveler would be, do you plan on going back anytime soon?
I do want to go back. I do. There were lots of things that I did not get to see.
I
want to
go too.
Like I got a chance to see the slave fort where the African slaves were first brought in. They have found that in Cuba, many of the African slaves came from an empire called Benin, which is today modern day Nigeria. And so, it is interesting that they know some of their ancestry and their heritage. Some of the jewelry that I brought back has bronze workings, which are notably connected to Benin and Nigeria. So it is interesting. So in terms of education and how families are valued and different things like that, there is a definite connection there.
Okay.
I got a chance to visit the Obama Dining Room, which is at the same Crystal Ball restaurant, because he was there in 2016 when he opened up relations and tourism exploded. And then, of course, we know that Trump came in afterwards and closed everything down. But he celebrated the fact that he wanted Afro-Cubans to have an opportunity. And he dined at that particular restaurant because it was one of three or four that are Afro-Cuban owned. It's a beautiful restaurant. We had a five-star meal in there. That was one of the places where it was literally $15.
$15. Wow.
I had dessert and everything. So, it is a once-in-a-lifetime opportunity.
I'm sorry, Michael, did you say something?
I said, did you have a question for,
Yeah, I was listening to you, Kim, and I am more than honored to know that you have had the opportunity to go and be in a place where we are cut off from. Crazy. Being that you were able, you and your crew were able to get to Cuba, what is the reason, I'm listening to and I'm piecing together that, you know, without American support, this country is struggling financially, in it, but they're making do. I mean, how does that feel to know that you are in a space where you actually witness and bear witness, you know, to people who are so humble, it appears to be, and the difference? And did they ever talk about, or did you ever get any information as to why Cuba was cut off from the United States like it is?
So let's go back to history. So when Fidel Castro took over, he told Cubans, we are one now. So there was no more apartheid system. He abolished it. That's not something that the United States wanted. So this is another fact that I learned. So Cuba defeated the Spanish Empire. They didn't just defeat the Spanish Empire with Cubans. They defeated the Spanish Empire with Cubans, Jamaicans, Haitians. They all came together. And Cubans, by the way, are Latin Americans. They are not Hispanic, so do not call them Hispanic. I learned that. And so when they defeated the Spanish Empire, the United States decided, oh, okay, we're going to come in. He wasn't President Roosevelt at that time, but Teddy Roosevelt came in and beheaded every one of the people that had led this siege against Spanish Empire. So America wanted to control Cuba, just like what we always do. And Cuba pushed back, and they didn't want that. And so when Fidel Castro turned to communism instead of democracy, that put America and Cuba at crosshairs. Because we were talking about Russia earlier, Russia is an ally of Cuba, so is Venezuela, so is Iran. Cuba is on the list of states that sponsor terrorism. It's complex because you have a Cuban block of people, specifically in Miami, Florida, who have notoriously mm-hmm. been known to bomb and do all kinds of things. These are also Trump supporters. Cuba, because it is untapped potential, it has not been developed, and because mm-hmm. they approach things differently, that's why they're mm-hmm. on the out. It will be interesting to see what happens with Putin and his Wagner adversary if leadership changes, because I'm wondering how that's going to impact Cuba.
And I hope it changes. I hope they become free. I hope it becomes a democracy, or at least opens up, and so that let's treat mm-hmm. these people better and open up. Obama was right to do this, and let them mm-hmm. let us do trades and all that kind of stuff. I'm hoping that if something happens in Russia, whether something happens in Russia or not, it obviously depends on who's in power here too, like Obama. These people haven't done anything to us.
Absolutely. They haven't. They are suffering because of politics. So we cut
because
them
of politics. Yep.
We cut them off from being able to have trade. So think of it. When a hurricane comes, because I asked a lot of questions, when a hurricane comes and I saw pictures, who comes to help you? There isn't anyone that comes to help you. For them, they're like some island nations may come and provide help, but nobody has the access like America does. We are the superpower. Mm-hmm. So there's no mm-hmm. carrier group or anything that comes. Now, the last hurricane, President Biden sent some aid, but that was about it. And when you see the picture, and Michael, you were born in Panama, right?
Yep.
Okay, so I've not been to Panama, but Panama is an island nation, correct?
It's actually landlocked. It's Central
okay.
America. It actually connects Central and South America, but there's
Definitely.
Water on either side. So it's just this thin strip of jungles and stuff, but it's landlocked on both sides, and the canal goes through it.
Right. You're correct. I was off of my geography. So think about it like this, guys. Belle Isle is mm-hmm. essentially an island. I know there's a bridge, but essentially it's an island. So think of it, if a mm-hmm. hurricane hit Belle Isle, where would you go? No one has a way to evacuate to the mainland. Cuba is not that far from Miami. It's not. It's literally 90-minute flight. So, and I think it's like 300 miles. That's why people get on rafts and float, because it's not that far. But the thing mm-hmm. about it is, a weather phenomena can take them out. And so they show pictures from Hurricane Irma that had just come through, where my hotel faced the ocean, and there's a road called the Malecón, and that's seawall and their main road, or Ocean Drive, whatever you want to call it, was completely covered in water. The bottom level of where the building, so my host wife, I went to his wife's family's house, and I met her mom and other people, and one of her nephews painted this beautiful picture for me. I have to send you guys a copy of it. It's gorgeous. I have to have it framed. But the bottom level of buildings, so like that first level. So if people are living there, and one of the things they said to me, they said people, when they evacuated, went to other parts of the island and came back, you found fish in your living room. And I thought, wow. They said you could swim in the water. They didn't suggest it, but you could swim in the water. And you could see in the pictures where the seawall had been breached, but you couldn't see the stone wall anymore because the water had come up so high. And so minor things like that, COVID, they had a 90% vaccination rate. Why? Because they didn't question their government. They trusted their government. The government said, you're going to get a shot. They were like, okay, bring them. And they got covered. They had a lot of COVID deaths. Don't get me wrong. They had a lot. But they were part of, so if you guys remember when they were doing the nasal medication, not just the test, but the medication, that came from a collaborative study between the university medical people from Cuba and I think the University of Chicago. So there are things that Cubans understand medically that they were able to give to America to help fight in COVID. So these are not uneducated, lazy people. They are just incredibly poor because their country is stuck in a war of politics.
Political ideology. Yeah. They're caught in the middle. Mm-hmm. But what a riveting, riveting account. This I wish that we could have, like, you know, a slideshow, and you can narrate.
I have a slideshow.
I'm looking at a picture of you in a red fancy car from 1952.
I love it.
And you're waving.
That's it.
You're waving to people like you're a queen and everything. What a trip of a lifetime.
I love it.
Interesting. And I know you're going to remember about stuff, and you're going to tell us about stuff for the foreseeable future, because everything, you know, you're not going to remember at the moment, but there are things that you're going to remember, like, oh, I got to let them know. I got to share this with the team. Mm-hmm. But this was so interesting. I was just here, just glued to my laptop here, just wanting to hear more and more about Cuba. And you were in Havana, right?
Yes.
Okay.
I got to visit a place called Montezana, which is about 3 hours outside of Havana, which is where the slave port is. And then I got an opportunity to visit the actual fort that helped protect Cuba from the Spanish Empire, which is actually in Havana. So that's why I said I have to go back, because I only saw two cities.
I want to go now. You know, my mom used to live there.
Yeah, absolutely.
And, that's why I'm so much interest in it, because as a Salvation Army officer, she was assigned there in the 60s. And so, I got her account from years back, and it's interesting to see that. Basically, it's very similar to what it was back then. But Kimberly, thank you for giving us an update.
That was amazing.
You're very welcome. Thank you for letting me share.
Yeah, so informative. All right. Look, I want to hear, I know that people have been doing stuff. I mean, I've been working on stuff. You know, I mentioned about LLS. But I do want to come back and have Henrietta and Chaplain Kathy wrap things up for us. We'll be right back after this message.
Have you or a loved one been seriously injured in a motor vehicle related accident? Then make your first call count. Call Johnny Hawkins, the Warrior Lawyer. With Johnny Hawkins, a nationally recognized super lawyer, he cares, and his primary focus is on providing exceptional service to each client, and not just winning big. For your free telephone consultation with Johnny Hawkins, the Warrior Lawyer, simply call 248-567-9990. Again, that's 248-567-9990. Support Black excellence by allowing Black excellence to support you through service.
I'll be there at concession. I'll be there when it's finished. Say like we supposed to be family, and not my business. Listen, business is business. Homie, business is business. Family business is business. Listen, business is business. Listen.
He's a member of the Realty.
We find them and fix them and flip them. We find them and fix them.
We find them and fix them and flip them. We find them and fix them and flip them. We find them and fix them. We find them and fix them. We find them and fix them and flip them.
Listen, we find them and fix them and flip them. We fix them and then we equip them. Got them dripping with style, got them like wow. Now everyone wants to know how. If you wanna do it yourself, you can generate generational wealth.
Yeah. It's so comprehensive and it's not expensive for such of a financial help. You'll appreciate how we articulate when we communicate and we educate and we motivate and we innovate. It's
Benjamin Brothers Real Estate. Benjamin Brothers Real Estate.
If you want to buy, sell, or learn how to do real estate investing, please call 331-248-7120 or email us at bbrosrealty@gmail.com. That's bbrosreality@gmail.com.
And now, back to the Michael Van Tool Show, sponsored by the law office of J.L. Hawkins and attorney Johnny Hawkins, the warrior lawyer. Call today, 248-567-9990. And now, Michael Van Tool.
It was so nice to have Mary on the show with us this morning. You know, she's an icon to the masses, but to us here on the Michael Van Tool Show, she's a friend that you can count on in a time of need. Missionary Humphreys helped so many people over the years. And these are the relationships that she's built are deep. And there is a relationship. There's a friendship. She's helped people over the years. And especially, a lot of the candidates. Some people have their family members have been charged in cases and facing the judge and facing time. She has gone to advocate on their behalf and things like that. So a lot of people owe her. Let me tell you, a lot of people owe Missionary Humphrey. She's done a lot to help people over the decades in her 95 years. So I was so glad that she was able to tune in and jump on the line. I think she's still listening too. So Missionary, I know their names. I know some of the names of the people she's helped. I'm not going to call them out, but she's helped a lot of people through things when they were going through adversity. Missionary Humphrey was working behind the scenes quietly to help them and their families while they went through their legal issues. And the thing about it is their issues were all over the news, okay? All on Fox 2, all on the Free Press, all on the Mildred Gaddis Show. And she was helping them behind the scenes to rebuild and to make sure that they did not fall apart. You know, now they might have been wrong and they were probably needed to go to jail, but the kids didn't deserve to suffer. The spouse didn't deserve to suffer, you know. And she helped the spouse, she helped the kids, the families deal with all of this behind the scenes. That's a lot. That's an untold story about, and she can't even tell those stories because, you know, she can't tell the names, but right. I know because we've sat down over coffee and I know for a fact of people that she's helped. And let me tell you one more thing before I move on and so I can stop talking and say something. But she has helped people get through stuff. Let me see how to put it delicately. Stuff that you shouldn't have did. Now, it wasn't something that you would go to jail for, but you did some stuff with somebody and... Mm-mm. You know where I'm going with this. They call her Missionary. I know I shouldn't have did this with this person, but I don't want it to mess up my family. Can you help me out? And she would help them and pray with them and try to get them back on track. I mean, everybody didn't go to social services. Everybody didn't go to a marriage counselor or, you know, sometimes they went to Hattie Humphrey, okay? That's all I got to move on. All right, Chaplain Kathy, you have a lot going on. Let's update us. I know we've been missing calls and stuff, but I'm back. Today's my last day of vacation. I'm back on the road, brother. So I'm back in town.
Amen.
Yeah.
Amen. Good to have you back, Mike. I tell you, it's good that you're back and safe. You know, God gave you some time, man, that you well deserve.
Henrietta.
I'll be hoping if you can get a chance to tell us about your trip.
Yes.
Tell
us
about your trip.
You were in the sun, too.
I was. It was very amazing.
Right, y'all just traveling all the way out. Well, I'm putting together with the Straight Back Movement. I'm the vice president of that. I was promoted to the vice president for the Straight Back Movement. The Straight Back Movement with Pastor Joyce Braddon. I'm the vice president now. She promoted me for that, so we're putting together a carnival in August. Putting together a nice carnival.
Oh, congratulations.
Yes.
Congratulations.
In District 7. Thank you. In District 7, where I am second county precinct delegate. And then you guys keep me in your prayers because I'm hoping to run for state rep on the next one.
So
that's what I'm focusing on, digging into the information. Then with Sheffield, he's been having some things going on. I've been with him. I've been with his daughter off the city council with a bike giveaway out there. So I've been doing a lot. Scanning in the political arena and brushing shoulders with the people that matter. So God bless you. God bless you.
You know, Chaplain, you're one of those kind of low-key people, but when they're around you for a few minutes, people start to see you're not just standing there by yourself.
You know
a lot of what's going on, and you're actually involved behind the scenes. You know, everybody ain't real loud and noisy. But you quietly work hard. And I just love when we have candidates on and you hit them with a question. I actually feel sorry and scared when I invite candidates on and they have to face you, Chaplain Kathy. I mean, they have to face the team. But your questions go deep, and you can't wiggle your way out of the questions you ask. You can't wiggle your way out. They have to come up with a real answer. I've seen you. You don't take those little easy answers. You don't take that. You will ask them again, and then you will call them out and tell them, "I asked you twice. You danced the way around us. What is your answer?"
That's what the people need.
Yeah,
that's what the people need, and that's why. You know, I'm here for the people. I'm a voice for the voices. And especially with people that's running for office. And I know that when it's my turn to run in that seat, they're going to hit me. I hope they hit me with the toughest questions they can come out with. But they're real questions. Because when you're running for, in order to,
you have a candidate on here. They're talking about, you ask them a question, what's your plans for Belle Isle? And they say, oh, I think we need to revise it, remap it out and develop it and all that. And then you'll ask them again, so what are your plans for Belle Isle? Oh, we just need to change it, do some things. And then you ask them for the third time, look, you danced around my question. I said, what you want to do for Belle Isle? Oh, I want to turn into a casino hotel island with restaurants and condos. And then now you know who you dealing with. Now you know who you're working with. They want to turn Belle Isle into a hotel, casino, condo, shopping mall, island. Okay?
But right.
Do the people want that? See?
Absolutely.
Do the people want a nice park that you can take your family to? Or do you want a casino, hotel complex on the island with IndyCar racing in the summer? Okay.
Yeah, they could put that on Babalo Island, but not on Belle Isle. They could put that on Babalo, but not Belle Isle.
Didn't they turn do you know Babalo Island is all these multi-million dollar mansions and stuff on there? I drove through Babalo Island. It doesn't have nothing to do with Babalo or nothing anymore. That's a private enclave of the rich now.
Okay.
Yep. They switched that. But you know what? At some point, you can't turn everything. you know, I thought that they were going to turn the casinos in Grand Circus Park. I thought, remember, there was a couple of scenarios. There was one where they would be on the riverfront in over there by, they say, you know, that was one thing, and it's, and that that didn't pan out. Then they said the casinos were going to be in Grand Circus Parks, and that the park would be in the middle, and it would be casinos all over. And then it ended up being Greek Town over here, MGM over there, you know. So
they should have listened to Coleman Young. They should have listened to Coleman Young Sr. when he said, don't bring them casinos in this city, because when you bring them into the city, it's going to cripple the city. Now, if you don't believe Coleman Young said it, Google it. Coleman Young told him he wouldn't allow them to get here because he knew what them casinos was going to do to the city of Detroit. They promised all of this money to, see, you done got me hot now. They promised all of this money to the schools. They explained to me why these schools and charged the public to charter. Well, I'll tell you why they went to charter schools. It's because charter schools offer no athletics. See, in the public schools, you had the athletic departments and all of that. Charter schools don't offer that. So it was easy to push them. So now you made, now there was nothing for the kids to do in school and even after school. Closed down all the Greek club. So then the casinos ain't done nothing but tore down the city, just like Coleman Young Sr. predicted.
One thing I don't understand, when these casinos come to town, and I'm talking about any town, because I've been to Atlantic City, I've been down to the Gulf Coast and other places, and I can tell you this, I think Greektown is one of the few places, because it was already an established area and it's still in downtown Detroit, but most places where the casino goes, everything around that casino dies. Now, the casino thrives. The casino has all the restaurants in there, nightclubs, the casino, entertainment. They have concerts in there. But if you walk out the door of most casinos in this country, there's nothing out there except that casino. It literally destroys the economic life around, unless it's in a downtown area already established. It doesn't bring any value to the area. The only value it brings is to itself. That's all it does.
Okay,
Henrietta, what you've been working on? I know you've been working on stuff this week. We've been talking back and forth every now and then.
I have been getting ready for two events coming up. One in July, which is our storyteller caregiver storyteller event, which is going to be held at Wayne County Community College. The Ebright tickets are up. We have already got at least 30 people who are come to attend. I have three caregivers who are going to tell amazing stories of the life of caregivers, just trying to get the movement moving. And then again in September 16th, we have our caregivers appreciation.
Is it open to the general public?
I'm sorry.
Is it open to the general public?
Yes, to the general public. Okay. Yep. So tickets are, I'm going to put up the link in the group. So if you just want to grab a free ticket and just come in and sit down and hear the story, it will be, you know, you can do that. And other than that, it is definitely opened up to the public. So I'm going to start promoting some more, pushing it a little bit more for July. We've already set the wheel in motion for people to come, and it's been on our O'Hara Park newsletter, and then our news group, and then our new email blast. So I'm expecting a pretty good crowd. Hopefully, you know, if nothing else come up, if people have so much to do with summertime and people are vacationing and taking a break from, you know, running children all year for school. So it's going to be a really nice event. But the biggest event I'm looking forward to is our caregivers appreciation ceremony or event, which is September. And that's the one that's going to have, you know, lots of activities and speakers and just fun stuff for caregivers in the city of Detroit to lift their hair down, to come out and have a good time, eat, mingle, network with each other. Hopefully we'll be able to get some more of our elected officials to come. So far I have confirmed two. So I'm looking to try to get Hill Harper to come out to this event. My caucus that I'm secretary of, which is the Progressive Caucus, we're on the team of
promoting Hill Harper as Senate. So I'm trying to make sure I can talk to his management or his campaign team to allow him to at least put that in his schedule to come out and talk to the caregivers and talk to the people in the community at the same time. So if I can lock that in, that would be great. And I'm also trying to get him to come to this storyteller event. So I'm working on a few things, getting Hill Harper out here to talk to the people and talk about his run, although he's announcing or will be announcing, if he have not announced, I think sometime next month, like July 1st or something like
okay.
that. So pushing on that, and this basically still doing what I do in the community, out here, Precinct Delegate 286, talking and motivating people about what's going on, passing out information, setting up voting training seminars for new people in Precinct 286, and then trying to accumulate people who haven't done any voting in the last 5 to 10 years to actually start putting them back into the mindset that how important it is for their vote for our communities to keep thriving. So just doing what I do on a daily basis, engaging, conversating, uplifting, inspiring, and motivating.
Excellent. Thank you. Thank you so much. And Kimberly, I remember I was traveling from when I was little, and I remember my parents or any of us in our family that traveled sometimes, like my mother and my sister went together somewhere, or me, my dad, mm-hmm. and my brother would go somewhere, or my mom and dad would go somewhere. Every time one of us came back, you know, because I would go sometimes by myself. I remember when I graduated from high school, I wanted to go back to Panama to see, you know, where I used to live and who was babysitting me. I wanted to meet them, and I went by myself. But every time we came back, we started off doing slideshows up against the wall in the living room.
And people
used to make a big deal about when they went on a trip and come back home, and you know now
uh-huh.
it's video, and you would invite your friends and relatives over and have food and sit there, and then somebody will narrate and say what each picture was, and that's how I kind of felt this morning, because you.
Well, I'm glad. Thank you.
Yeah, you painted such a picture. I love to hear,
mm-hmm.
like, if Chaplain Kathy went on an African safari and went out there with the lions and cheetahs and elephants and stuff, I would love to sit here and get his reaction and to listen to him paint a colorful picture of how he was
mm-hmm.
out in the bush with these wild animals and snakes and all that stuff. And maybe he needs to go
on
one of them African safaris, you know, like Madonna used to do, go over Africa, take all these Louis Vuitton suitcases and then come back and tell us how it was. That would be fun.
Mm-hmm.
Chaplain,
well, I can't do what Madonna would do. I don't even listen to Madonna music. So I wouldn't do what she do. You hear me? I won't be doing that.
But
you lost me with the wild animals and snakes, man. I'm
that,
straight.
I'm telling you,
I'm straight
that,
on that.
But people used to do that. Can you imagine back in the 30s and 40s during the colonial era when people used to go on these African safaris and they would actually go out? I mean, it is. I've never done it, but I've seen movies and I've heard of people where they would go out and get in the Jeep and or the Range Rover, and then they would just go out along with some guys that have rifles, and that was your only protection. And you would camp out in tents, and that was your only protection against those wild animals out there is your guide.
I wouldn't be out there.
But what an adventure for Cuba, though. What an adventure. And I would love to go.
Yeah, that was amazing.
It's an adventure walking in the city of Detroit at nighttime. What are you talking about? I ain't got to go to no safari in Africa. Walk around Detroit at a certain time of night.
Yeah, we need we need one of those armed military trucks, convoys to go through. Look, sometimes at night, if I'm in an area that's kind of deserted or I'm a little nervous, I don't roll my windows down in the summertime. I turn my air conditioning on because I don't want to pull up at a light and I don't want nobody running over and carjacking me. Matter of fact, I go through this now in the middle of the night. I'm at a, and I, the light turns red, and I'm looking around, and it's all broken down, and somebody laying down on the ground, somebody drinking. I don't stop. I don't know about y'all. I don't stop in them low, quiet, deserted streets in Detroit at night. That's one time I stop, then go, okay? I'm not going to be no sitting duck, sitting at a light.
Exactly.
I caught a flat. I caught a flat one time in a bad neighborhood. I just left my car. I said, you know what, y'all go right ahead. I pray the Lord you'll be back when I come back with the tow truck.
You want
to
go?
No. No, I will. No. But I'm going to tell you this. If you want to get rid of you don't even need the police out of curfew time. All you got to do is put a slave trader truck out, have them just riding around at night and say, we slave traders. People going to be so scared to be outside at nighttime doing anything wrong, they're going to feel like one of the slave drivers going to grab them and smack them in the truck.
You know you right, because some of these guys, they're tough with a 90-year-old lady. They'll break in her house and beat her up. They'll come after us. But you put a truck, have some white guys on some horses with some whips, and you round
it
up. All of a sudden, them tough guys, they be laying down on the ground to be taken.
Yeah.
Okay? They don't even fight. They'll give up. That's one thing I just don't understand.
Right. Just think about when you see the military truck driving through the city. Somebody always taking a picture of them, but they never around no more. That's because people get scared when they start seeing those sights.
Yep.
Triggers their mind.
Yep. They get scared when they see some stuff like that.
Yeah,
I tell you. But everything else, they really
put the National Guard, put the military at them gas stations and at them stores. In uniform, I bet you won't have the problems that you have. You won't have them, especially at the gas station. You won't have them.
I don't know. That's some psychological thing. But anyway, we got 3 minutes left. We took up the whole hour and a half today, but it was really interesting. Sometimes I go back. I don't know about you guys. I go back and actually listen to the show sometimes. When I have some more time, I'll go back and listen to it. Or if I miss the show, I'll go back and listen to it. I try that sometimes. It's good to reflect and it lets you know how you sound too. I do that sometimes. But anyway, it's a great day today. I hope you all stay safe. I hope the storms aren't too bad, Kimberly, because this is going to be some hot air with these cold fronts coming this afternoon. And so if you have any outdoor events or even if it's just inside, just batten down the hatches and be careful because these storms can get pretty bad. God bless you guys. Thank you, Missionary Humphrey. Thanks for calling in. She listened for most of the show. And so we appreciate you and love you. And thank you guys for being on the show this morning and being part of this fantastic Sunday morning team. Mr. Andrews is on the road. She checked in earlier too. So be safe out there. And I know when she gets back, she'll probably try to get a chance to listen to the show, too. So God bless you. Be safe. Have a good Sunday, everybody.
God bless,
right, bless
everybody.
You.
God bless.
Bless you all.
Listening to the Michael Van Tool Show, brought to you in part by Michigan Ocean Strategy Group. Build your customer base now. And the law office of J.L. Hawkins and attorney Johnny Hawkins, the warrior lawyer. Call Johnny Hawkins, the personal injury expert today at 248-567-9990. Thank you for listening.
Everything is going to be all right.